wobbled uneasily and too big for her bike. For Deck and AG, it was old hat. Lorica kept her distance from the rest of them. Mattis took off, and for just a moment, he felt like he had in his dream the night before leaving Dirk Teal. Like he had Admiral Ackbar commanding him, and he was taking on the whole Empire. Mattis! Joe snapped him back to reality. Ride with your eyes open. That's rule one. Rule two is to stay in sight of the others. You know how fast you were going? You ride this bike into a tree, and you better not survive. It's worth more to the Resistance than you are. Mattis tried to think of something cutting to say back, but Joe wasn't interested. He was already riding away and into formation. Joe yelled back, "Prove me wrong!" as if there was no way Mattis ever could. They scanned the swamp, occasionally dipping in to retrieve a piece of a ship or building. They kept mechanical items and left structural ones. Occasionally, a hill would emerge from the mire like a breaching beast, and one or another of them would be able to scan dry land. But mostly, they were in dank swampland. A canopy of gnarled, foreboding trees blocked out any brightness Vodran's covering of brown clouds allowed. As they moved deeper into it, the vegetation clustered closer and intertwined. Woody limbs hooked woody limbs, and low trees bent their spires together as if whispering wet secrets. It was slow going. It wasn't long before Lorica on one end and Climo on the other had disappeared behind brush. Joe split off after Lorica and told AG to find Climo and bring him back. The group needed to stay in formation. Mattis figured Joe didn't want to leave AG with any of the rest of them. As soon as they lost visual contact with Joe, Mattis and Deck veered off after AG, who was waiting for them. Sari had strayed a bit beyond them. She was at the foot of the tall, twisted tree, staring into its great umbrella of foliage. They couldn't get her attention, so they got off their bikes and went over to her. "What are you looking at?" Mattis asked her.
"Birds," she said distractedly. "I love birds."
"Me too," Mattis said, scanning for the birds she saw. "Anything that flies, I like."
"All the variety of life in the universe in just one species."
Mattis wasn't exactly sure what Sari meant by that, but she clearly meant to mean something, so he just nodded solemnly. Mattis told Sari about his big book of birds at the base and said he'd loan it to her if they made it back. She had two to swap with him. Finally, Mattis saw the birds she was looking at. Tufted khakis. Four of them, in multi-hues of brown to camouflage themselves, but with bright pink spots on their chests. Now that he saw them, he couldn't believe he'd ever missed them. They were splashes of brightness in the muck. They were a family. The parents were showing the babies how to fly.
"Can we break up this tea party? I didn't bring no scones," Deck drawled.
"Look at that, A.G.
Your works are going to get muddied something awful."
He shook himself down a bit, spraying wet grit everywhere. Deck took a tool out of his boot and popped A.G.'s chest open, working quickly.
"Let me know when you can talk right again."
"Maybe it isn't so bad what he saw," Sari offered.
"Maybe there's an explanation." Mattis hoped that was true. "Then why am I trying to restore A.G.'s language setting? Why'd Joe put a clamp on it?"
"You want me to try?" Sari offered. "I'm good with clamps."
"He's my brother, dosh it,"
Deck growled. He softened.
"Sorry."
"I understand," Sari said and scanned the surroundings for Joe. Deck pulled another tool out of his boot. It sounded to Mattis like he was scraping at something inside AG.
"Almost got it. Just a little bit more."
"Got it,"
yelled Deck, and with a cracking sound so loud it set the tufted khaki squawking angrily, he popped a restrainer bolt out of his brother's chest and into the swamp where it sank.
"Oh, I was going to shove that down Joe's throat," Deck said in disappointment.
"Much better," sighed A.G., closing his own chest plate. "I've had so much bottled up. First of all, in case this happens again, Deck, you need to learn beeping language. Second, for units that talk too dang much, G2 sure ain't got nothing to say. That's what I meant when I pushed that G2 off me. Been holding on to that for a while."
"Yeah, yeah, what did you see? What's Joe's secret?"
Deck asked, replacing his tools in his boot. A.G. couldn't meet Deck's eyes.
"You're better off not knowing. He stole language from me. Who knows what he'd do to the rest of you?"
Deck spat. "If Joe's up to no good, it's no use keeping his secret. If the Resistance doesn't see that we're on the right side of things and Joe ain't,
and I don't want to be a part of the resistance. Tell us what you saw and let's handle it, or else what good is it that we're each other's people?
A.G. looked from Deck to Sari to Mattis. It was as if he'd read instructions on his friends' faces. They were there for each other. He had to tell them the truth. Behind him, the family of birds flew away together. Mattis and Sari couldn't help smiling.
All right, A.G. said. They leaned in and the droid started telling them what they were so eager to hear. Joe Gergerod is...
A.G. didn't get to finish, because that was when the Dianoga took him.
Chapter 9. A Dianoga was roughly the size of a large dinner table. Its body was generally submerged underwater, so only its single eye stalk was visible, but somehow this cephalopod had flopped itself onto the squishy hummock on which the group had paused. A Dianoga possessed 7 suckered tentacles, 2 of which wrapped around AG-90's torso and started to drag him into deeper swamp. They could hear the gnashing of the spiked teeth that surrounded its pulsating maw.
It's chewing on my foot! Get the dang thing off! AG howled before his voice processor got jammed into the dreck.
Mattis grabbed hold of AG's upper arm. The Dianoga pulled hard and made high-pitched squelching sounds. Mattis feared he'd pull AG's arm off. He wasn't strong enough to free the droid.
Sorry, he said, snapping her to attention. Grab his torso!
She was on AG in a moment, flopping down in the mud and hugging him around the middle while the Dianoga squalled and shook the droid. Deck batted at the creature with a chunk of wood, and the Dianoga simultaneously pulled AG off the mound toward subaqueous wetland and slapped away Deck's attacks. The creature went into a slippery roll, turning AG over and over, but Sari didn't let go. The Dianoga was strong. They needed a new tactic.
Sari, can you get this thing off of him?
Mattis shouted.
Can't do that and hold AG at the same time, she yelled back.
AG lifted his head from the muck.
Keep holding me,
he cried. Mattis got into a crouch and launched himself at AG, grabbing him around the waist beside Sari.
Okay, he huffed. I can try to hold him here. You get the thing off.
Sari hauled herself up. Sheets of mud dropped from her body. Deck hacked again at the Dianoga with his piece of wood. He had no effect. It snatched him with another of its tentacles and pulled him into the mud toward its puckering mouth. For someone who didn't like to be the team muscle, Sari sure knew how to fill that role when it counted. She roared like something wild and pressed her body into the rot-stinking Dianoga. She lifted it high and it squealed and gnashed. It dropped Deck but still clung to AG. Sari squeezed the creature tight. It didn't like that at all. It wailed a high-pitched complaint. Deck and Mattis worked the tentacles until they finally pried them off AG.
I'm out!
AG shouted. Sari let go. The Dianoga splashed down and swam away. Deck lifted his face out of the viscous guck.
You were telling us something?
Mattis rolled AG onto his back. The droid was banged up, but functional. His eyes flashed a couple of times, and he lifted himself to a sitting position.
Yeah, A.G. said. Joe Gergerod is a traitor.
Chapter 10. When the security door had slid closed, separating A.G. from his friends, he had found himself in darkness. He stopped moving. He didn't want to make any noise. He dimmed his eye lights. He was at the end of the long corridor, and he shuffled quietly toward the one room with lights on. He heard muffled voices even before he reached the open door. AG peered inside. Joe sat hunched forward, intensely listening to the man and woman on the holocom. They were both middle-aged. The man's face was drawn and serious. His hair was cut short like Joe's. The woman looked vaguely amused. She nodded when she spoke.
Great progress has been made, Joe, she said. We have the location of a map that will lead us to Luke Skywalker. Finding Skywalker will change the course of things.
AG wasn't certain exactly what was happening. He knew the Resistance was looking for Luke Skywalker, so maybe those people were on a mission for General Organa. But why report to Joe? Why didn't J Squadron know about Joe's mission? It wasn't until the conversation had continued a bit and the man stood up for a moment that AG comprehended what was happening. The man wore a military uniform, slate gray and severe-looking. It wasn't a uniform AG-90 had seen on any Resistance personnel, and he was fairly certain the insignia on the chest didn't represent anyone in the New Republic, which could only mean one thing. The woman spoke. "Joe, the Supreme Leader believes in tradition. He and everyone here believes in greatness passed through generations. You come from a long line of loyal warriors who have tried and succeeded in changing the order of the galaxy. When you come home to us, Joe, you shall join your rightful place in the First Order." Hearing the story from A.G. in the swamps of Vodrin, Mattis was physically revolted. He doubled over and put his hands on his knees, trying to catch his breath. Joe was sneaking around at night, making secret holocalls to First Order military personnel? Joe was a jerk, but Mattis hadn't thought he could be a traitor.
"I knew it," Deck said. "You did not," A.G. waved him away.
"Well, I knew something was up with Joe. He's so strict and by the book, you know. No one acts that way unless they're overcompensating for being a double-crosser."
"I can't believe it," Sari said.
"We have to tell Admiral Akbar," Mattis said. But he was disappointed. Joe was far from a friend, but he was someone Mattis had admired. It had always seemed to Mattis that Joe wanted to do good. How could a person betray the Resistance? How could someone see what General Organa and Admiral Akbar and the others were doing, as Joe had taken Mattis to see that first day, and then decide to stab them in their backs? Those people, their leaders, were heroes. History had proven that.
"There are comms on the transports," Sari reminded them.
They got on their bikes and sped solemnly back the way they had come. They went over the last hummock and the transport ships came into view. So did Lorica, who stood on the boarding ramp of one of the ships with her boot in her hand. She was scraping it on the edge of the ramp. They parked their bikes and walked toward the ship.
"There's muck on my boot," she told them as they approached.
"I know how it feels," Deck said.
Lorica stopped scraping and glared at them. She pulled her boot back on. "You're not supposed to be on the ships. None of us are. I'm not even supposed to be here, which is why I'm about to bike back out onto this garbage planet and look for, I don't know, some half-deteriorated Y-wing." She shook her head, focusing.
"Anyway, you'll get in more trouble."
"We couldn't possibly get in more trouble," Sari countered.
"You'll get me in more trouble, I mean," Lorica clarified.
Deck sneered.
"We have to contact the base. You wouldn't understand."
"I understand a lot," she said. The statement seemed loaded with meaning.
"Can you just trust us?" Mattis asked.
Lorica barked a laugh. Mattis tried complete honesty.
"Joe is a traitor."
Lorica shook her head.
"What are you talking about?"
"A.G. saw him," Mattis said.
"How do you know? Wait, you fixed him?"
Lorica asked Sari.
"Deck did," A.G. said.
"Good. That wasn't right what Joe did, but that doesn't make him a traitor. What if you're wrong?" she asked A.G.
"I ain't."
"But what if you are?"
"I ain't."
"Can you allow for the possibility?"
A.G. considered that.
"Nah," he said.
"Permission to board," Deck said wryly as he, A.G. and Sari headed up the boarding ramp and inside. Lorica grabbed Mattis by the arm. He felt that same floating and sinking sensation in his gut, like he might cry or laugh or do both.
"Mattis, make sense for a second."
She was grave.
"If you take this to Akbar and you're wrong, you can't just run around the Resistance base yelling traitor. People like Akbar take that really seriously."
"It is serious," Mattis countered.
"But if you're wrong, you've made accusations. You've thrown things into upset. You could be in more trouble than you are now. I don't think there's any coming back from this accusation. You could get us all kicked out."
"A.G. isn't wrong," Mattis said, though a bit uncertainly.
"He can't be."
"He could be," she reasoned. "Maybe Joe's doing something for General Organa. Who knows? Joe wouldn't betray the Resistance. Joe loves the Resistance." She didn't let go of his arm, but she softened her grip. "You understand that, Mattis. He needs the Resistance just like you do, just like I do." Mattis's head dropped. She had that effect on him.
She weakened his resolve every time. It was because he knew she was smarter and more accomplished than he was. He trusted Lorica, despite the fact that she didn't seem to like him very much. Maybe he trusted her because of that. He wished having the Force meant he could resist her sway. "I'll get them to talk to Joe first," he said. "Good enough," she agreed. Mattis hurried into the ship. He made his case with the others. They knew what AG had seen. They owed it to Joe to hear him out. Deck waved that away, but Mattis insisted. If Joe hadn't judged Deck and AG instantly and regarded them as trouble, if he hadn't decided that Sari was just muscle, wouldn't they all have been better off? Wouldn't they have been a more cohesive unit? Well, there they were, judging Joe just as rashly. They owed it to him to confront him and find out if there was any explanation. Mattis promised Deck that he could punch Joe really hard if they were right. Deck agreed to those terms, and moments later, they were all, including Lorica, biking through the swamp to confront Joe. Chapter 11. They found Joe in a clearing on a surprisingly lush piece of dry land, staring out into distant space. They got off their bikes. Mattis felt as if he were intruding. But this wasn't Joe's home or secret sanctum. He had received the same punishment they all had. Based on what AG had told them, he should receive even more. So why was Mattis unsure all of a sudden? Deck obviously had no such pause in his convictions. He marched up to Joe and cuffed him on his shoulder. "Finding it hard to do your dirty work out here, Chief?" "It's all dirty work out here," Joe said, sighing. Deck was taken aback.
I'm sorry. Did you just make a joke?"
Lorica told Joe. "This may not be the best time for jokes." Deck said, "Aw, don't dash his dreams, Lore. It's his first joke." "Don't call me Lore," she snapped at Deck. "Why aren't you all scavenging?" Joe asked, shaking off whatever reverie he'd been in. "'Cause we gotta talk to you," Deck said. He poked Joe in the chest. "Knock it off, Hansen. Get back out into the bog." Mattis and Sari stood slightly apart from the others. Sari was peering up at the nearby treetops, chewing on her bottom lip.
"I got your clamp off my brother. We're here to give you a chance to explain before we report you."
"You don't want to do that, Hansen," Joe warned.
"Personally, I hope you don't explain yourself." On "don't," he went to poke Joe again. Joe was prepared. He grabbed Deck's wrist and held it so firmly that his knuckles turned white.
"Let me go," Deck said hoarsely.
"What's your problem, Hansen?" Joe asked.
"You're the one got us sent to this backwater rock. You have no call to come after me about it."
"He thinks you're a traitor, Joe," Lorica explained. "Tell him you're not."
Joe wasn't listening to her, though. He was too mad.
"You probably feel right at home here," he said to Deck. "It's all sludge and nothing. Is this why you joined up, Hansen? To wade through muck and scrap broken-down land speeders? Couldn't you have just done that back on your bog-trash home planet?"
Deck fumed. He wrenched himself free from Joe's grip, and both of them stumbled back. Joe knocked into AG, sending him sprawling to the ground. AG's landing made a squishing noise that got Sari's attention for a moment before she looked back up to the nearby trees.
"You knocked my brother down?" Deck hollered at Joe.
"He didn't mean to,"
Lorica shouted. Deck didn't care.
"You try to wipe him? You threaten him? And then you knock him down?"
He charged at Joe and dragged him into the mud. They too landed with a quaggy sound. It really was a fight now. Sari and Mattis were on the outside of it. Sari was trying to figure out how to get in the middle of it and whether she wanted to. She hated to fight. Mattis was distracted by, of all things, a bird circling overhead. It had 3 dark purple spots on its chest, and Mattis felt like it was important in that moment to recall what kind of bird it was. Typical, Mattis thought. Rather than take action, I'm bird-watching. I'm no hero. He, like Sari, tried to figure out how he could help his friends. Deck and Joe grappled on the ground, throwing punches and calling each other names through clenched teeth. AG tried to right himself nearby.
"You've had this coming," Joe said, and walloped Deck in the jaw. Deck fell forward onto Joe, elbowing him in the chest hard.
Lorica threw herself into it. Mattis didn't know what side she was on. It seemed that she was only trying to break up the tussle. She kicked Deck off of Joe. When Deck scrabbled backward, Joe rolled, knocking Lorica into the mud, too. She threw an elbow into the side of his face. And again, Mattis was distracted by that bird circling, slowly, drifting in the air currents. If he could identify what kind of bird it was, he would stop being distracted. Why couldn't he think of it? Why did it seem so important? Sorry was no longer at his side. How long had he been staring into the sky? It was hard to tell how long anything had been happening. Had the fight lasted seconds? Minutes? Sorry was edging around the side of the thatch of brambles on which they fought. She wasn't looking to get into the fight herself, but Mattis could see she desperately wanted to pull someone, anyone, out of the fray. A few meters from them, Deck and Lorica rolled in the muddy thicket. Joe was pulling Deck off of her. Deck was covered in grime. He probably didn't even know whom he was fighting anymore. Not that that stopped him. Just behind Joe, A.G. stood, wobbled on his feet, then got knocked down again as Joe backed into him. He made a startled whooping noise. Oh, no! All at once, Mattis remembered the name of the bird circling them. The Duns Thaxton. He prayed all the firmest prayers he could remember that he was wrong. Sorry, Mattis said. Tell me that's not a Duns Thaxton. Mattis pointed up at the bird, which cawed as if it were greeting the two people looking up at it. The color drained from Sari's face.
Three purple dots.
She looked at the bird, then down at the fracas.
The Duns Thaxton, Mattis swallowed.
No one heard him.
The Duns Thaxton, he shouted now. They build their nests.
Deck, Lorica, and Joe were apart now, panting, but they were focused on each other.
Guys!
At least Lorica looked at him.
They build their nests!
What are you talking about, Mattis? Lorica snarled.
The Duns Thaxton!
What? Oof! She was blown over by Deck, who grabbed her and threw her to the ground.
Get off!
Joe gave Deck a good kick in the side, and as Deck went over, he grabbed onto Joe's leg, pulling him down, too.
It builds a strong covering of branches and mud and stuff over a sinkhole, you guys.
Mattis tried to warn them, but they really weren't listening.
Sorry, get them out.
Sorry took a step toward the fighters. Mattis kept trying to explain. If there were just a hole in the ground, no animals would. They'd go around.
Shut up about holes, Bands, Joe barked. The Duns Thaxton builds a kind of nest out of sticks and mud over the hole, so that animals will think it's just more ground and walk over it and fall through. They're symbiotic.
Sorry took another step toward them.
The Duns Thaxton picks clean the bones of whatever they don't finish.
Of whatever what don't finish? Asked Deck.
Duns Thaxtons have a symbiotic relationship with Sarlax.
Mattis shouted and everybody froze.
They were standing above a Sarlacc pit? The fight was over.
Sari reached out.
Don't move. Take my hand, Deck.
I have to move to take your hand, he said, reaching for her. Everyone could feel the ground beneath them giving a little with every shift of weight. The Sarlacc's prey tended to be larger than humans, so the nest had lasted so far. But from the sound of it, it wouldn't last much longer.
Deck, pull Joe with you. You can reach him, Lorica called out.
Deck looked to Joe and then to A.G., who had been knocked aside.
Explain yourself, Joe. Everyone groaned.
This isn't the time or the place, Sari yelled. Let's get out of danger first and do the rest somewhere else, far, far away.
Tell us what you're up to, Joe. I got all day,
Deck said, reaching out for Joe.
You smirking muck-dweller,
Joe yelled, leaping at Deck, tackling him and pulling Sari onto the thatch, too. The nest cracked and buckled, and as a purple-spotted Duns Thaxton cawed eagerly overhead, Mattis watched his friends crash into the Sarlacc pit.
Chapter 12 Mattis grabbed Lorica's hand as she fell. The force of it wrenched his shoulder and pulled him to the ground, where he laid at the lip of the pit. He took her other hand and tried to pull her up and out, but to no avail. He started to scoot backward, but he felt his shoulder scream in pain.
You're not going to be able to pull me out of here, she told him with
more calm than he could find in himself.
Then climb up. Do something,
Mattis panicked.
There are only teeth under me,
she told him as if that was something he already knew but didn't want to admit.
You have to let me go, Mattis.
What? No!
He cried. She kicked at a tentacle grabbing for her foot.
The sounds of their friends echoed off the walls.
Do you hear that? Lorica asked. The others are down there fighting for their lives. That means the fall didn't kill them. Now let me go help them fight and buy you the time to save us all. How am I going to do that? Mattis asked.
By getting us all out of there, she told him matter-of-factly.
How am I going to do that? Mattis asked, his grip slipping.
Figure it out!
She yelled as she fell. A tentacle grabbed her in the air and pulled her out of sight. Mattis looked around for any sort of rope. A vine would do. Anything that he could lower into the pit and use to pull them out. He scanned the trees. No vines. Plenty of moss. No help. He tossed aside pieces of the Duns Thaxton's remaining nest in case there were any sizable sticks that could reach. Nothing. He wished those speeder bikes had side bags packed with emergency kits for such a situation, and that's when he realized that the answer had been in plain sight the whole time. He climbed onto the speeder bike, pushed it to the edge of the Sarlacc pit, and rode it into the humid maw. Mattis had never wasted an opportunity to go as fast as he was allowed on a speeder bike. He wished they'd trained him for this kind of slow, vertical descent. It was more like riding a rotocropper than a speeder bike, he thought, as he realized that he'd performed that action hundreds of times back on Dirk Teal. Confidence he'd never felt surged through him as he went past the downward-facing teeth that prevented escape. He beamed as he saw his friends, the dregs of J Squadron, all armed with sticks from the nest, fighting as a team for the first time. They were standing on soft tissue through which the mostly digested remains of a rancor emerged. A Duns Thaxton picked at the giant creature and cawed angrily at the disturbance. "Anybody need a ride?" Mattis asked as a tentacle whipped the speeder bike, knocking him onto the ground and covering him with digestive goo. The Sarlacc's beaked tongue snatched at Mattis. As it closed around his head, Sari shoved a thick branch into the tender inside of the mandible. Dek grabbed Mattis by the ankles and pulled him out just as the Sarlacc snapped the branch into pieces.
"You owe me one, Mattis," Sari winked. "That was my best twig."
She helped Mattis up, and he gagged on the rancid breath of the gaping gullet surrounding them. AG gave them sticks to bat the tentacles away, and they did.
"I thought the planet stank out there," muttered Mattis.
The sound of the speeder bike powering up drew their attention to Joe and Lorica, who were flying up and out of the pit.
"Just when you think someone has your back, because he literally had your back against this hole-in-the-ground monster, he goes and does a thing like that," Dex said, taking his frustration out on the Sarlacc. "If this thing doesn't kill me, I swear I'll kill them."
Three tentacles whipped around Dex, and that beaked tongue shot out again.
"Sorry, help him,"
AG yelled, trying to pull the tentacles off his brother. Sorry didn't respond. She couldn't. Tentacles held her tight. Mattis whacked at the tentacles as hard as he could until he felt another one wrap around his foot and flip him upside down. He saw two more pulling at AG, trying to rip him in half. The beaked tongue weaved, pointing to Mattis as if deciding whom to eat first. It didn't get the chance. Lorica and Joe flew back in on a pair of speeder bikes and dragged their hot engines along the walls of the Sarlacc, burning it. The creature bellowed in pain all around them, and its tentacles loosened, then went for Lorica and Joe. Despite the fear and danger all around them, Mattis felt like they were doing maneuvers they'd practiced 1,000 times. Lorica and Joe crisscrossed in the narrow, wet space, using a flight pattern that the angry mouth in which they flew couldn't comprehend. Mattis and Dex stood back to back with Sari and AG turning, defending, reporting status. Lorica and Joe called for the pairs to disengage and separate. Each bike drove between a pair, and with a "Now!" familiar from countless evac drills, they mounted the moving speeders and crisscrossed out again. Their momentum shattered the teeth in their path. The bikes took some damage, but not as much as the Sarlacc. The two bikes, with all of J Squadron clinging to them, spit out into the swamp. The speeder bikes shuddered and died. Mattis and his friends fell into a heap, one on top of the other, all of them covered in mud, all of them bloodied and used up, and all of them laughing. Just happy to be alive together. A crashing noise came from the brush behind them, and though they were drained, all six of them strained to their feet and took a defensive position.
Where one ended and the next began must have been difficult to discern, so caked in mud and sticks and gunk were they. Which explained why, as he burst out of the brush on his speeder bike, Klimo cried out in horror. Seeing it was them, he said, "Friends! What did I miss?" Chapter 13. By evening, they'd traded the mud and gloop-crusted clothing for clean jumpsuits that they found on the transport shuttles. Those got fairly muck-covered, too. That was inevitable on Vodran, but at least there was no sarlacc goo on them. While the rest of them were falling into and climbing out of the sarlacc pit, Klimo had stumbled onto a small ridge. It was circled by creeping vegetation and shrouded by low-slung treetops, but its center was clear and somewhat dry. There, they built a fire. They'd regret bringing piles of blankets out to the ridge, but the thought of sleeping in the transports reminded them too much of the claustrophobia of being inside the sarlacc's mouth. Plus, Deck snored. Out there, his sleep snorts would be just one instrument in the orchestra of animal noises surrounding them all night. They ate double rations. Deck told them there were enough varmints in the swamps that, with him around, they could survive for months. Thanks to the group, he added, he was around. They did their best to find dry wood and piled it onto the fire. They burned their ration wrappings. The sky, the sun had been veiled behind cloud cover all day, went from a light gray to a dark gray to a painted bluish purple. They sat on blankets in a circle, full, exhausted, and alive.
"This is a good squadron, you guys."
Klimo's enthusiasm hadn't waned, but he wasn't bouncing around the clearing. His body was as spent as everyone else's. Hiking through the bogs and scavenging odd scraps had done him in.
"J-Squadron could take down the First Order all by ourselves."
They all laughed, except for Joe. "We're getting there," he said, which seemed an enormous concession to the rest of them. "We'll make pilots of you, I'm sure of it." Deck shook his head.
"We are pilots, man. Doesn't it make any difference what happened here today?"
Joe held Deck's gaze. There was no malice in it, as there might have been just that morning.
"Why do you want to fly?" Joe asked him. "I already fly," Deck replied. "In my head, I'm in the clouds."
"Your head is definitely in the clouds," Lorica said snarkily. She was back to her irritable self, but there was a good-naturedness to it.
"I'm serious," Deck said. "AG and me, you said it before, we're swamp rats. We've been down in the muck so long there's mud in our lungs, and that ain't a complaint. I like where I'm from. I like our people. I love them. But there were nights when AG and me would lay on the roof of our home and look up at them stars. There's a world out there. I'm good enough to do good in it. I already helped all I could on quests, fixing folks' vehicles and the like. I reckoned it was time for me to fix bigger things. Flying is a way to do that."
They were all silent a moment. Each of them owned a version of Deck's recital. Mattis thought, if we ask Joe his version, maybe the truth will come out. After Joe's heroic turn at the Sarlacc pit, Mattis couldn't believe he was a traitor. Then, of course, Mattis was clever enough to know that letting his entire squad die was no way for Joe to work his way up the resistance ranks. Which left Joe with what loyalty?
"I felt the same," Mattis said, "except I can't fix things, and people tend not to like me."
They laughed, and AG said,
"That ain't true."
Mattis shook his head.
"I don't mean they dislike me. I just mean they don't think of me. I'm Mattis."
He remembered Klimo's words. "I'm just another person. Just another speck on a planet in a system of planets in a galaxy. I think I can fly, though. I love to do it. But I've only ever done it a couple meters off the ground on the farm or in deep space in my dreams. Or in The Sims, I guess, but that's never leaving the ground. When I believe in something, I'm pretty sure I can do it. And I believe I will be the greatest pilot anyone's ever seen." They laughed again, and he laughed with them. What Mattis didn't add was, "I have the Force. It flows through me." He hadn't meant to speak so much, but now that he had, he seemed unable to stop, and they didn't want him to. No one had ever listened to Mattis that much. He felt both safe and utterly exposed.
"I want to make a difference," he said. "Before I joined the Resistance, I didn't know about the First Order, but I knew there was bad in the universe. There was bad in the orphanage where I grew up. So there must be bigger bad across the galaxy. I don't want bad things to happen to good people. So here I am, learning to fly, fighting against the bad people to help the good ones." He was out of breath. He took shallow gulps trying to hide it. He wished someone else would talk. Maybe the Force was working after all, because Lorica spoke. "I didn't do the things people say I did." An invisible wave ruffled all of them. They couldn't help it. Lorica's words were surprising and discouraging. She dropped her forehead into her hands, then lowered her palms onto her knees and sat up straight. "I never told anyone," she said.
"You're talking about the weapons cache?" Sari said. "It belonged to smugglers. You blew it up."
"It blew up. That's true," Lorica said. "I was just there. My parents own a luxury hotel on Kurgan's in the New Republic. This was a couple of years ago. I was in a very expensive school. I learned to hunt with Bossa hounds. I learned to ride Fathiers in competition. I hated all of it. What I liked was flying. They bought me a brand new Sorasub Petit Opu yacht. It was gold, of course. Everyone at the academy envied it, and I loved it. But not for the reasons they did, because of the way it looked or because it was expensive. I loved it because it meant I could go anywhere I wanted to go. That ship was freedom. I flew from one end of Kurgan's to the other. The planet wasn't big enough for me. I was also reckless. As much as the ship meant to me, I didn't take care of it. I scratched it up on the sides of structures and bridges. There are a lot of bridges on Kurgan's. It was full of dents and divots after just a week. It didn't matter. My parents would have it repaired. I left it outside the hotel one afternoon. I was only stopping in for a moment for food and to spend some credits. The yacht hovered at the entrance, gleaming. Beautiful. A light freighter came screaming into our landing strip and smashed right through it, exploding both ships. It's a good thing my ship was there, or the freighter might have gone right through the front of my parents' hotel. I was only steps from the landing strip. If I were slower, I'd have blown up too. We didn't know what the freighter was or what its pilot was trying to do. The Kurgan security force found the illegal weapons on board the remains of the freighter. They were the first ones to congratulate me on my work for the New Republic. Then people started talking. I was a hero. I'd saved the hotel, the city, Kurgan's, the Republic. What could I say? Should I have told them it was an accident? So, Lorica finished, that's why I fly. I'm already getting credit for being a hero. I thought I should make myself one for real. Mattis didn't waste any time telling her. You will. I'm sure of it. As he said it, he realized he was sure. Lorica, despite her jagged personality, was a good person.
Lot of secrets coming out, eh? A.G. intoned. He was pointedly looking at Joe.
Here's another, Joe said. They all leaned in, despite not wanting to betray their interest.
Lorica tried to talk me out of erasing your memory, AG-90.
He let them chew on that a moment.
That's why she was there at droid maintenance that night. She told me you're a good pilot, that it's your glitches that make you one. Mind you, I was mad enough that I wasn't minding what she was saying, but what she was saying was sound. A reasonable argument. I think your glitches could make you a great pilot.
It's possible. The enemy could never predict your actions. He looked around the group, meeting the eyes of each member.
And that's true of all of you. I tried to make you all pilots by the book. It's what made sense to me, but I discounted what each of you brings to the table.
You're all full of glitches, he said. They laughed.
More than most, Deck agreed. And it's those glitches that make you all what you are.
and it's what makes you all great. And that's why the First Order will never defeat us.
Since you brought it up, Deck began.
I'm not a traitor, Joe said. He watched the fire, wouldn't meet anyone's gaze. But my parents are First Order officers. Joe laughed at their collective gasp, which broke the tension.
They're good parents, is what's strange. They're just so wrong about the First Order. They think it will make the galaxy better, but the things they talk about, it won't. The First Order is bad. We have to defeat it. Sari asked,
but they can't know you've joined the Resistance, right? That would be.
She didn't have words for it. Confusing was one, but that didn't begin to cover it. They don't. They think I'm at the New Republic Military Academy on Ganthal, but the commander at that academy is sympathetic to the Resistance. She sent me here, and she covers for me. General Organa knows, so does Admiral Akbar. They allow me to talk with my parents. That, he said to AG, is what you saw the night you spied on me. Mattis was so relieved he nearly started crying. Klimo, on the other hand, bawled like a baby.
That must be so hard.
Sari rubbed his back gently. EG nodded.
I'm sorry, he said.
They all mumbled apologies to Joe, then sat for a moment in an abundant silence, broken only by Klimo's snorfling.
I fly because I like math, Sari said.
She didn't get a chance to explain further, because that was when a panicked, bleating Tauntaun crashed through their campsite. Chapter 14.
That was a Tauntaun,
Klimo observed a moment after the animal had run bleating back into the brush. The Tauntaun had blown over the ridge, knocking flaming logs from their campsite. The logs sizzled on the soggy ground. They all stood looking around, waiting for an explanation, maybe wondering whether that Tauntaun had been a collective dream, because Fodran was the farthest planet from the animal's native icy hoth in every way. Sari took a few steps toward the brush where the large animal had disappeared.
Why would a Tauntaun?
They heard the stampede before they saw it. The bleating of Tauntauns, more than one, but other animals too. Roars and grunts and howls, and they were getting louder.
Run! Mattis yelled, but it wasn't soon enough. The animals were upon them.
Three Tauntauns leaped over the ridge, crashing through and caroming off of Sari, who fell backward into the muck. The herd kicked up a flock of long-necked, speckled swamp birds that screeched as they took wing. Lorica tackled Mattis and threw him off the ridge and into the bog as the other animals bounded through. A pair of clawed, toothy, slinky Nexu, gnashing at the fleeing Tauntauns and whatever else went near them, didn't stop to attack. They, too, ran with the herd. They, too, did not belong on the planet. Mattis peered over the ridge as more and more animals galloped through. A heavy-hoofed Bassa hound nearly took off Mattis's head. Luckily, Mattis jerked back, and all he received was a face full of mud. Wiping it away, he saw Klimo across the ridge, jumping into some underbrush. Or at least Klimo attempted to jump into some underbrush. Instead, he took a flying leap and was met midair by a lumbering moof. Klimo bounced against the animal's thick hide, then dropped back down into the mud. For once, the Rodian didn't come up short and rolled away in time for the moof's hoof to barely miss him. Lorica yanked Mattis back below the ridge before he could locate any more of their friends.
We have to help them! He yelled over the cacophony of footfalls, bellows, and yawps. When this passes, Lorica hissed. When this passes, it'll be too late, Mattis snapped back.
He went to rise, and Lorica pulled him down again. Then, clearly thinking better of his idea, she said,
Okay,
and hoisted him up onto the ridge. They were in the middle of the stampede. Animals surged around them like water around jutting rocks. If they were still, they got nudged side to side by a passing Jefflack or bumbling Dewback that hardly noticed them at all. Something else had the animals' attention. Escape.
They were all running from something. Whatever it was surely was coming, which meant Mattis and Lorica had little time to help their friends. Quickly scanning the ridge, Mattis found Sari and Klimo. The Rodian had made it to the underbrush and was doing his best to stay hidden and safe. Good. Mattis just hoped Klimo didn't get stomped by something bigger than the pack of moss lenas that were bolting through his hiding space. Sari, however, was in more dire circumstances. Her back was to them, but Mattis could tell she was defending herself against something large. She took rapid but tentative swings with her fists against whatever she was blocking from their view. Mattis pointed, and as quickly as they were able, he and Lorica made their way to her. Sari was fighting a Ginzi. The creature was about half Sari's size, but it was thick, with chunky, clay-colored and blonde feathers. Its tiny hands ended in hooked talons. The Ginzi stood on two skinny legs and swiped at Sari with its talons. Behind the creature, Deck was hunched in the mud, clutching his side. The Ginzi made a non-stop, atonal gibbering noise to distract its enemies.
"How's it going?" Lorica asked, dodging a Ginzi talon lash.
"It tore a chunk out of Deck," Sari said. "We have to get him out of here. Something is coming."
Mattis nodded curtly. "You two can handle it." Lorica shot him a withering look.
"I would die."
It shouldn't have made Lorica and Sari laugh, but it did.
"Get Deck," Lorica said.
Mattis circled the Ginzi, and the creature followed him with its black eyes. As if they'd practiced it for years, Sari and Lorica leaped at the Ginzi, each grabbing one of its feathered arms. The Ginzi shrieked and gibbered, but neither girl let go. They held its wrists so it couldn't slash them. Mattis rolled Deck over and saw the long slice the Ginzi had left in his friend's side.
"Can you walk?"
"Do I have to?"
Deck moaned. The stampede grew thinner, with just a few small or overly large animals. They heard a rumble and crunch of branches as something big moved toward them through the swamp.
"Yes," Mattis said.
They stood, Mattis supporting Deck as they stumbled away from the ridge.
"Meet us at the transports," Lorica shouted as they ran.
Mattis helped Deck get back to the transport ships. He left Deck on the boarding ramp of one.
"Get this running," he said. "I'll be back with the others. We have to get out of here."
Mattis didn't wait for Deck to protest, just bolted back the way they had come, slogging through the bog until he was back at the ridge. It was dark, and he could barely make out the path, but their fire still lit the clearing. That was how Mattis saw the Todd swarm approaching. Todds were vile, bile-dripping animals of a sort one might get if a wampa mated with a Rathtar. All teeth and mucus and fur. Usually snow white, these Todds, there were six of them, were caked with swamp muck. They bowled toward the ridge, mewling and growling. One Todd could destroy a dozen farms by eating every living thing and destroying what remained. Six would surely end them all. The two Todds in the lead of the swarm bounded up the ridge, heading directly for Sari and Lorica, who still held the snapping, pulling Ginzi between them. Pink bile flung from a Todd's jaws into the fire and sent sparks spitting out. Mattis heard Lorica grunt, "Throw!" as the Todds barreled toward them. She and Sari pushed the Ginzi into the two oncoming Todds, one of which barely stopped to snatch the talon monkey thing in its teeth. The other Todd, seeing the Ginzi's kicking feet, chomped down on them. Together, they pulled the Ginzi apart. The other four Todds smashed into the two already on the ridge. Seeing Lorica and Sari, all six hunched on their short front legs, fanning out their spiked tails. This was a sign of imminent attack.
"Hey!" Mattis shouted. "Over here! Look at me!"
The Todds turned as one bellow growled and pounced. He was just far enough away that they missed, and he didn't look back to find out how small the gap between them was. He pushed through the bog back toward the ships, the Todds making slick chomping noises behind him. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw Sari and Lorica running along with him. If they could make the ships, they'd be safe. Todds were vicious, but they weren't large, and he thought if AG had made it back that they could get out of there before the swarm dismantled the transports. He hoped AG had made it back, and Joe as well. He worried that he hadn't seen them or Klimo since the stampede. He worried they might be lost forever on Vodrin. He also worried he might be eaten by those Todds, but somehow that immediate fear seemed insignificant. The Force was with him,
It would keep him safe. He came into the clearing with the Todd swarm behind him. Sorry plowed into a Todd just as it lunged for Mattis's head. She knocked it off course, but in righting herself, she pushed Mattis into the mud and in the way of another drooling Todd. It bore down on him, and thinking quickly, Mattis rolled through the mud into an overturned log. He heard the Todd chewing on the thick bark, but that would slow it down. Thank the Force. He was safe for now. Mattis listened, trying to figure out whether everyone else was safe. He heard a boarding ramp raise. That must mean Sari and Lorica had successfully boarded the transport Deck was manning. Maybe the others, too. He was listening so intently to those distant sounds that Mattis didn't notice when the Todd stopped gnawing on his protective trunk. That was odd. He'd have thought it would have gone until it broke through, at which time Mattis would have raced for the other transport. So where was the Todd? Mattis dared to crawl through the hollowed-out trunk to peer out the other end. The Todds were rolling and pouncing away, retreating back into the swamp. Why had they given up? As he crawled out of the overturned trunk, Mattis got his answer. Rancors. Chapter 15. Four of them circled the transports. Each was twice the size of their ships, if not bigger. They had jagged rows of teeth with meat still stuck in them and long, branch-like fingers ending in blade-sharp claws. One was feeding itself the remains of one of the Todds. Chunks of the dead animal dropped into the mud below. The Rancors sniffed the clearing with their snubby snouts and grunted, hunting. They knew prey was nearby. Mattis froze. Of course. Rancors. Vodrin had belonged to Hara the Hutt, Mattis recalled. Admiral Ackbar had told them all about it. Hara made her fortune buying, selling, and trading exotic animals to other huts around the galaxy. When Hara the Hutt had abandoned the planet, it was assumed she'd taken her business with her. It seemed that she hadn't, and that her animals had returned to the wild, thriving even in that harsh environment. The Rancors, and the other animals too, were left to roam free, left to hunt. One of the Rancors spotted Mattis and growled deeply. The others all turned toward him. That low rumbling grew louder, angrier. The Rancor that had first noticed Mattis took a lumbering step forward, reaching out its long arm. Mattis dove behind the fallen tree. The Rancor lifted it up and tossed it aside as if it were a stick. It advanced on Mattis until a second Rancor pushed it aside. The Rancors snapped and growled at each other, fighting over their easy prey. Finally, one of them snatched for him again, just as the boarding ramp to Deck's transport opened with a sharp hiss. The Rancor pack turned as one and made for the ship immediately. Mattis rolled back into the mud and nearby brush. He was shaking, his whole body racked with fear. His teeth banged together, his head sounded like a rock slide. His shoulders, though he lay in the mud, were hot with terror. He peered out from the brush, but he could barely take in the scene without making himself sick. The Rancors surrounded Deck's transport as it lifted out of the mud. Deck and Lorica hung on the ramp, firing the little stun rods they'd been given for defense against Dianogas, which they had stupidly left on the ships earlier. The flares had little effect on the Rancors, who swatted at the hovering ship. Sari did well steering just out of the Rancor's reach. She made sure all four were interested, which they very much were, and jetted forward a bit. The Rancors followed her. At that rate, she could distract them long enough for Mattis to get on board the other ship with Climo. Climo! He'd made it to the other transport. He sat in the cockpit waving madly for Mattis to join him. Mattis leaped to his feet. If he made it to Climo's ship, they could take off and find A.G. and Joe. The others could get free. Climo was behind the controls of the transport. He pumped his fist at the other ship and punched the controls. His ship hovered in the air, distracting the Rancors from Deck's transport. What was he doing? Their plan, spontaneous as it was, had been working. Mattis was in the middle of the clearing when two of the Rancors lost interest in Deck's ship. He suddenly found himself between them. They roared at each other. One grabbed for Mattis and the other batted the first Rancor's claws away. A close call for Mattis and a lucky one. He wouldn't be that lucky again. He dove into the knee-deep bog water and tried to keep out of sight.
Both rancors splashed around, scraping in the mud with those scythe-like claws, looking for him, roaring. The other two rancors were attacking the ships. One walloped Klimo's ship, sending it spinning into Dex. Dex held on, then climbed back into the transport, but Lorica was launched into the muck below. It was chaos as Lorica evaded one rancor, Mattis two more, and Klimo's ship went plunging into the swamp. If Mattis and Lorica didn't get to it, they'd be eaten for sure. Rancors lunged again for Dex's ship, and it rose higher to dodge them. Mattis and Lorica crawled for Klimo's ship. A rancor claw came down close to Mattis. He rolled. Lucky again. That luck couldn't hold. Klimo gunned his transport out of the mud. None of the animals was paying him much attention, which was lucky too. That might be their chance, but there were rancors between them and the ship. Dex's transport dipped again, then buzzed around the clearing. It was hard to maneuver in so small a space, but Sari was doing it. Her math, Mattis thought, wasn't failing her. Distracted, the rancors chased her, waving their long arms in the air, clawing at the ship and sometimes scratching and denting it. But she kept on until, finally, Mattis and Lorica dragged themselves onto the boarding ramp of Klimo's vessel.
"Friends!" Klimo said. "You made it!"
"We made it, friend," Mattis agreed. "Now, let's get out of here." Mattis rolled over and gave a thumbs up to the other ship. He could see Deck in the cockpit, grinning but determined. He could see Sari beside him, keeping the transport aloft in odd loops and corners. Deck nodded, turned, and said something to Sari, and suddenly the transport ship blasted into the night sky. It was only moments until it was indistinguishable from the stars beyond. One ship gone, the rancors turned toward the other. The beasts were smarter than Mattis had realized. They hadn't forgotten. They were also faster than he'd realized. All four galloped toward the ship. Klimo punched the controls and the ship lifted into the air. Mattis and Lorica were still on the boarding ramp when the rancor, the biggest and tallest of the pack, grabbed onto it. Its claws sunk into the metal of the ship. The rancor roared. It tore the boarding ramp off, throwing Mattis and Lorica back into the bog. Mattis landed hard, the wind knocked out of his lungs. He heard Lorica beside him, saw her in a fog as she dragged herself into a crouch and then kicked him back to reality. "Move!" she breathed. They did. They limped and struggled out of the fray while the rancors were still distracted by Klimo's ship. The largest of the rancors hadn't let the ship go. With all of its weight, it hauled the ship from the sky and smashed it into the swamp, splitting the vessel open like a nut. In a moment, all four rancors were upon it, clawing at the metal and rending the transport. Mattis tried to get to it, to save Klimo, but Lorica held him back. There was nothing he could do. If Mattis made for the ship, threw himself in the middle of the wild rancors, he'd be dead too. Klimo was gone. Their friend, always so enthusiastic, always so happy, was gone. But they would be next if they didn't move out of there. Lorica hadn't taken two steps, practically dragging Mattis along with her, when the rancors turned again to find them. All four rose from their hunched positions over the remains of the second transport ship. The rancors moved toward them. There was no reason to rush their quarry any longer. Mattis and Lorica were trapped. There was no escape. Lorica took Mattis's hand. They faced the rancors.
"Y'all lovebirds mind if we butt in?" AG's voice came from the wall of twisted trees behind them.
Without thinking, both Mattis and Lorica plunged into the copse from which they had heard AG's voice. The rancors were quick behind them, picking up and throwing the trees, smashing them into splinters, crushing them into the mud under their wide feet. But Mattis and Lorica stayed a step ahead, finally stumbling into a clearing where AG and Joe had their ramshackle speeder bikes. "Climb on," Joe commanded. Mattis was happy to follow orders. He climbed onto one bike behind AG while Lorica leaped onto the other behind Joe.
"Hang on," AG said,
and as the rancors crashed after them, both gunned the speeder bikes, whizzing around and past the creatures and leaving the rancors to lumber behind, never fast enough to catch up. Chapter 16. They sped through the swamps until the complaining roars of the rancors could no longer be heard. Then they raced even farther. They didn't stop until the trees had thinned and the land beneath them was more meadow than bog. A distant sun lightened the sky north of them. Finally, they were safe. When they stopped, they compared their stories. Joe asked, "Klimo,
and Mattis shook his head. Joe bowed his own head. They were all exhausted. Even AG seemed wiped out from the efforts of the past couple of days. Joe surprised them by saying that he thought Klimo would have been good for the squadron. He wasn't just a funny, weird little scrunch farmer, Joe said. He really wanted to make a difference.
Well, he was a funny, weird little scrunch farmer, AG added with a smirk in his voice.
Yeah, but not just, said Lorica. I don't think we would have gotten away without... Mattis wanted to say Klimo's sacrifice, but he couldn't make his mouth form the words. He sobbed into his hands. Things were as bad as they could ever get. Where will Deck and Sari go? Lorica asked. We don't know where the base is. The cargo ship won't return for weeks, and they can't just fly in circles until then. They'll come back for us, Mattis said. Lorica shook her head. When they see what's left of the second ship, they'll think we're dead, and then they'll leave again.
They'll look for us, AG said. We're their friends. We're their people.
How will they find us? Mattis asked. His head hurt. His body hurt. He didn't want to think of details. He wanted to sleep. He wanted to be somewhere safe. In a bed.
We'll make sure they can, AG said. We'll make ourselves conspicuous.
At least we can get around, Joe added, smiling at the bikes. Mattis couldn't imagine smiling. Not for a long time. AG noticed.
Look, he said. He took Mattis by the shoulders. The four of them stood in a small square. We're safe. We got away. We're alive. We faced more in the past couple of days than any of us have ever seen before, and we survived. Together. And that's what we're going to do from here on out.
Mattis nodded. Then, as it occurred to him, he actually did smile. Besides, he said, how could things get worse?
All of you, freeze where you are!
The voice came from behind Mattis, but as he heard it, he saw the armor-clad figures coming into view all around them. They had weapons. They surrounded Mattis and his friends. By the insignia on their armor, he knew what they were. First Order stormtroopers. Things had just gotten worse.
Join the Resistance. Escape from Vodran.
Chapter 1. Mattis was thinking about General Leia. He'd seen her across the command center, rushing from room to room at the resistance base, or giving orders, or listening to intelligence briefings. She embodied determination and the wisdom that comes from integrity as she decided the best course of action for the resistance, for the galaxy. Mattis knew the stories of Leia Organa before she was the experienced and judicious military leader of the resistance against the First Order. Mattis collected stories of the old days in the way that other kids collected grav ball badges. He was hooked by tales of the fight against the Empire. He found inspiration in those old stories. He found guidance. He also found heroes. Leia Organa had been a princess, a captive, a senator, and a freedom fighter. She was imprisoned by the Empire and enslaved by a Hutt. Had seen the love of her life frozen in carbonite and her home planet destroyed. But that woman, whom Mattis saw calmly command and thoughtfully lead, taught him to never give up. And somehow, even with all she had endured, even as she fought and strategized and inspired, all very serious business, Leia was funny. When J Squadron had accidentally shut off the power in the compound just as the pilots returned and it took everything everyone had to bring them in safely, Mattis was convinced he was going to be drummed out. While they had awaited their punishment in Admiral Ackbar's office, General Leia had come in and looked them over.
"You're responsible for the power outage?" she asked.
"We're the screw-ups." "Yes, ma'am," Deck answered with uncharacteristic deference.
"Some of my best friends are screw-ups," she said with a smirk. "We need more screw-ups around here."
She'd left them feeling better for the moment. How easy would it have been for her to become embittered?
How sad, but understandable for her to lose her fire and grow stern and cruel. Leia never did. Mattis hoped he'd retain his sense of humor through his current perilous circumstances as a prisoner of the First Order, alone in a damp cell on the swamp planet of Vodrin, assuming, of course, he got out alive and had been funny in the first place. Mattis wasn't the kind of kid to get discouraged, even though he had faced a series of calamitous events since he joined the Resistance, and even though those events, one after another, had led him to the cell on Vodrin, Mattis remained optimistic. He joined the Resistance for a reason. This was part of it. He wanted to make a difference. That was why he'd left the orphan farm on Dirk Teal. It was Mattis's destiny, he knew, to bring about change in the galaxy. He would become a hero like Leia Organa or Admiral Ackbar. For what other reason had he been imbued with the Force, the arcane energy that was created by and bound together all living things? The Force was what made Mattis special. It was what made him want to do more than just harvest Hemel on Dirk Teal. And though the Force hadn't yet manifested itself in him, he knew it would emerge when the time was right. It was why, even now, sitting alone on the cold, hard floor of his cold, hard cell, he didn't overly worry. The Force was within him somewhere. Of course, the Force hadn't been much help in keeping him out of this catastrophe and all the catastrophes that led up to this one. There had been plenty of opportunities along the way for the Force to intervene. When Mattis arrived on the Resistance base and befriended AG-90, a droid with a singular personality who looked cobbled together from junkyard components, the Force might have said, "Watch out, buddy." The Force could have cleared its throat in warning when AG introduced Mattis to the droid's brother, Deck Hansen, who was charming enough to talk them all into trouble and only sometimes out of it. Or when Deck suggested that, for a laugh, they hack the base's mainframe. That the true reason for this transgression was benign made little difference. Admiral Ackbar came down hard on Mattis and his new friends. The Force had nothing to say about any of that before, during, or after. It did nothing to keep Mattis out of hot water at any step. If that wasn't how the Force worked, it was how it should work, in Mattis's opinion. It had been a torpedo to blazes since then. Admiral Ackbar placed Mattis, Deck, AG, and their friends, a bookish behemoth named Sari Nadal, and a hyperactive Rodian named Climo, under the rigid instruction of a human rule book called Joe Gergerod and his brusque Zeltron second-in-command, Lorica Damaris. AG caught Joe communicating with the First Order and assumed Joe was spying on the Resistance. The spite between them came to a head when Joe tried to reset AG-90, whose peculiar personality was due to the fact that his memory had never been wiped since the day Deck's mom built him. The fracas had culminated in all of J-Squadron being sent to do scrapping work on Vodrin, a murky, humid planet on the Outer Rim. Vodrin was a monster-beset swampland, once occupied by a nasty, imperious hut. The atmosphere on Vodrin was so muggy and stifling that Mattis felt he could cut it with a dull blade. The humidity irritated everyone, setting them against each other. The Resistance was not the place of harmonious camaraderie Mattis had thought it would be. Until it was. It took an animal attack, really multiple attacks by many animals, before J-Squadron pulled together. It was the incident with the Sarlacc pit that started it. Each squadron member, Mattis, Deck, AG, Sari, Joe, Lorica, and Climo, had a hand in rescuing someone from that pit. After the harrowing incident with the Sarlacc, Mattis felt he'd found the fellowship he'd expected from the Resistance. It was then that Deck confronted Joe about his presumed treachery. Joe revealed he had secretly joined the Resistance under the noses of his First Order officer parents. He wasn't a traitor to his squad mates, but to his family. Mattis felt they understood one another, or at least they were starting to. Then their group was torn apart, first by a rolling pack of snarling, stupid Tods, followed by a cadre of vicious Rancors. Deck and Sari escaped in one of their short-range shuttles. Climo commandeered the other one, and he was poised to rescue the rest of them, but he never made it. The last image Mattis had of his Rodian friend was of Climo in the cockpit of the shuttle, struggling to maintain its lift against Rancor after Rancor, until finally the struggle ended tragically. Mattis felt horrible, and worse, he felt responsible. Climo was the first recruit Mattis had met on the transport to the Resistance base.
He was wiry and sunny, always fidgeting and restless for adventure. Mattis could only wonder what might have become of Klimo if they hadn't befriended one another. Klimo might have been warm and safe now, bouncing like a Rathtar after 3 cups of calf back in his bunk on the base. Mattis knew it was unhelpful to his present situation to think that way. A guilty conscience wouldn't free him from this mess, but it was difficult not to. So again, he thought of General Leia. Mattis was certain the general felt guilt about the death and chaos she'd had a hand in, but he was equally sure that she didn't dwell upon it for too long. Based on the stories, he figured she would use that guilt, that anger, that sense of justice to fuel her crusade. She could transform those negative feelings into positive action. That was what made her a hero. He would do the same, and that would make him the hero he knew he was. Maybe that'd wake the force within him. When that happened, Mattis was confident it would feel like the rush of riding the speeder bike that had zoomed him away from the creatures on Vodran. He was confident it would not feel like he felt now, after escaping the deadly fauna but ending up surrounded by First Order stormtroopers. The moment before J Squadron was surrounded, they'd dismounted the speeder bikes on tall, wet grass. Mattis and Lorica stretched and caught their breaths. Joe had his back turned, measuring how far they'd ridden. AG checked his speeder's gauge, flicking it back and forth, making a sharp clack-clack sound. All of you, freeze where you are! Mattis didn't know which of the stormtroopers, suddenly all around them, had spoken. Mattis neither fainted, which he nearly did, nor came unglued, which is what he wanted to do. Maybe he was too physically and mentally spent, or maybe his brain just refused to believe that he had fought against and hid and fled in the muck and mud and brush from wild animals and his own friends, only to fall into the hands of a real evil enemy who wanted to do much worse than eat him.